While people are getting situated, I'll start because we do want to spend about 15 minutes looking at the new book. But we have some people that haven't spoken yet, and they've come up to me at the break and would like a few minutes. I also am going to, because I'm at the mic, I'm going to talk. It says, as you can imagine, your steering committee was thrown off balance by Bob's death. What do we do now? Without our glue to hold us together. It was only a month and a half ago, you know. So this is what has evolved. We want you to know what has been going on behind the scenes. We met and divided the 30 plus. These are the jobs that I wrote out that Bob did for us. He did these things for us. 30 details. And we had to figure out how to get going without the glue that Bob was. So this is what happened. Anna, that you just spoke a little bit ago, who was evacuated twice, she's going to deal with the Union Bank relationship, shepherd the liability insurance policy we carry, and oversee the 501c7 nonprofit requirements, which Bob did. Anna's going to take that over. Don George is going to assume the budget, the income, and the bills, that kind of responsibility. She's the accountant, the financial responsibility. She came to Forbes and said she could do that. I signed the rent agreement for this place. Please, we have enough money to pay the rent. And I'm going to be the communications coordinator with the registration, the member spreadsheet, weekly email reminders, order the books, color groups. The email project has been a real steep learning curve for me. And we would not be here today without the assistance of the Apple Store. Anybody who has a Mac, I'm telling you, it is invaluable, the services they provide down there. We first sent out emails, nobody got them. Sent out again, and they got red banners that saying, don't open this, your computer is going to be infected. No, it was only from me. So we divided, he helped me divide it into four groups. So bless John at the Apple Store. Ann is going to take a name tag project, color groups. Tom has had two jobs, and now he's going to take two more. He's the one that came up with this seating arrangement. Tom, this is Tom's doing here. And he's also going to make the flyers each three times a year. Martha has consented to take over the current events table. She's sitting back there now, including that very popular independent newspaper. She's going to bring it every morning. Cindy and Jerry are going to take over the table over here. They couldn't get here today because they live in Oxnard. But maybe Peter DeVoy and maybe Joe Stein will help schlep those books around. Maybe he will. Now we come to the hospitality part. Ginny has continued and decided that she would oversee it with the help of Judith and Agnes. And Jane Fehrenbacher is a new recruit. So those are the ways the steering committee is working to help this all work. So thank you to the steering committee. Now let's go. Another of interest of Bob was researching the book. Pat McClure is going to take over that responsibility with Alice. Alice said she would help out with that. Pat is going to offer a clipboard on the current event table for anyone to suggest a book. And we already have one suggestion for the fall book. So keep up with the clipboard back there. We had five wonderful suggestions for this session, and we all read them all. But we chose this one about the ecology. So before we go on to the book, Spiritual Ecology, we have a few more leftovers from people that want to say something. Not leftover people, just leftover remarks. So you want to come up now? Okay. Laura's going to lead us off. Laura is Bob's daughter.
Hello. First of all, I just want to say thank you for inviting our family here. It's been a real blessing, especially since the original memorial was such a stressful, fire, smoke-filled occasion. I still don't really feel like I've properly grieved my dad, but it's very special to be here and hear all the wonderful things you all have to say about him, but we obviously felt as well. One of the things that I wanted to express about my dad was his unconditional love, and he got that from my grandma, his mother, and no matter what I ever did or said or became, I knew he loved me, and he would do anything for me. I always teased him, "I know, Dad, you'd give me your right arm if I asked for it." And growing up, and even as an adult, that was an incredible blessing to know that no matter what I did, he would always be in my corner and for me and love me. And when the 2016 book about the election was mentioned, that reminded me of just how much of a burden he had for the division that has come because of politics and, you know, whatever else. And he was so excited to do that book and to try and bring some kind of healing and oneness to people that had differing viewpoints and ways of looking at things. And, you know, because of his sweet heart, he never made it a personal issue with differences. You know, he was able to say, "Okay, you think differently. I'm going to really try and understand how you're thinking because I want to understand where you're coming from." And growing up with that example has been incredible for me, and a good lesson for me to remember in times like we're in. And you know, there's a lot of people that we interact with that are very different from us, but we're all human, we're all the same, and love can transcend anything, I believe, and that was one of the greatest things I learned from my dad.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for reminding us of that. He was trying to bring people together. That's what the stages were all about. You're in this stage. I understand that. And let's talk about it. You're right. I'm glad you brought that up. And now Christine has something.
I'm out. Oh my God. Okay, Bob and I met at Warden Life, and then we were members of the same church. And one day, I had no idea who he was. I could have cared less. This man is sitting behind me, comes up here, and says, "Where do you get your haircut?" I'm going, "Really?" You know, I go, "I'm a hairdresser. I work in a beauty shop." And he says, "Where? Can you cut my hair?" I went, "Yeah. You didn't know that." "Yeah." So for 10 years, your father showed up at my house or in my beauty shop about every two and a half months when his hair was just miserable. He'd call and he'd say, "Guess what? It's me." And I'd go, "Lynn's been yelling again." He goes, "Yep. We have to go to a party." "Okay." I said, "When can you come?" "An hour?" "Yeah, I'll be right there." And he'd show up, just like you said, with his pocket, with his notes, and I would look and I'd go, "Oh my God, what are you doing now?" You know, we both had a lot in common. We liked dirt, and everybody said soil. We liked to garden, so he loved to come to my garden, and we'd talk about the plants and the dirt. And then we loved golf. The first time, I think it was here, I needed a fourth. And I went, "You want to go play golf? Glen Annie at 1 o'clock. He said, "Well, let me call Lynn." So he calls Lynn and said, Lynn said, "I don't care." You know, so off we went at 1 o'clock. He loved it. Three ladies and him. And then he got to play from the red. His ball went twice as far as ours did, you know. And he thought that was cool, too. So we had a lot of things. We really enjoyed each other, and he was a great friend. Thank you.
me before Christine comes up, is there anybody else just being shy? Maybe I'd like to come up and talk. Anybody else want to come? Going, going, going.
First of all, I want to really thank Judith, particularly for the email that I already had known that Bob had died. But when I got that email, it was just such a comfort to know how he spent his last few days. And even elicited a little bit of envy, hoping that I and all of us could leave fully engaged in the things that give us joy. So I really want to thank you for giving us those details, and that was very consoling. Bob was a very good friend to me in a very special way that I won't forget, and I promise I will pay it forward for as long as I can. And so this is what I wish for Bob and for his family and for all of us who already miss him. Deep peace of the running wave to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the quiet earth to you. Deep peace of the shining stars to you. Deep peace of the gentle night to you. Moon and stars, pour your healing light on you. Deep peace of Christ, of Christ, the light of the world to you. Deep peace of Christ to you.
To a little bit about what the book study is going to be. And after Pat introduces the book, we'll have one more song, and then we'll see you next week. But let's have Pat tell us about the book.
Good morning, everybody.
It's been such a privilege for me, a relative newcomer to the circle of fans for our beloved Bob, to hear so many stories. I know him so much better now, thanks to all of your stories. We had in common, as you will remember from my own few lectures, Ken Wilber's books. But I can also imagine Bob standing back there, pleased, a little embarrassed, a little uncomfortable, and he would do what I've come to know well. He'd use his hand, he would say, "But move it along." So I am going to move us along this morning. Judith told you that the book that we're... In fact, I didn't bring the book up with me. So sorry. Or the little practice book, but I'll tell about it. Here we are. Spiritual Ecology is a book that came out of this group. And you will find next week a little thank you listing of the thoughtful people who had made these suggestions to us. In fact, we liked it so much that we want to keep that feedback loop going. So you will find a bright colored blue clipboard on the information table next week, and you'll see a kind of criterion that we like to set out for the sort of books that we're looking for. For the inveterate book readers of Word and Life, so many books are picked up and read thoroughly or partially with appreciative or duty done responses. But every once in a while, we find a book that's truly significant, that triggers a new way to see the world,
that's even life-changing. That's the sort of book Word and Life would like to keep track of. So we invite you to share your significant finds on the book list below. Its purpose is to offer this community of friends and spiritual adventurers some new pathways to understanding and growing. So you can put your name here, the author's name there, and the book title there, and you'll find it next week. But this book also has a small sidekick book that was published a couple of years after it was published. Actually, this is a second edition. And that little book is a book of 10 practices that we can actually instill in our own personal lives to reawaken ourselves to this connection to the sacred in life. We have a little stack of them. They're small brown books in the back that we have on sale for, I think it's $11. Right. So some of you who really are as interested in practice as ideas will want to look at those books. Well, you've heard the story of the way in which spiritual ecology was chosen on that last day of Bob's life. We had no idea. Oh, Judith is bringing it up. Let me just have her show it to you. It's a little book full of ways to really do what we're going to be talking about. So take a peek at it, please. Thanks, Judith. Spiritual ecology is a call to a new breed of ecological understanding. And you've heard how it was chosen on that last important day of Bob's life. A more prescient book choice than we could have imagined. Today is day 10 of the ecological disaster that has befallen Montecito. As a larger community, we're shocked and numbed by the scale of the catastrophe, the lives and structures and livelihoods that have been lost, the beloved landscape that's been obliterated. I lived in Montecito for 43 years, and just a year and a half ago moved, so that I am unmuddied and heart sick to see what has happened. And yet, a wise friend told me on day 3 of the mudslides that in her prayers and meditations, she'd received a clear sense that the spirit of the place where La Casa remains is fully present and functioning there. Now, the spirit of the place is not going to show up on the county's list of available resources to deal with this disaster. But the awareness that there are other levels of being and intelligence in play there changed my perception of La Casa's situation measurably. And it has reframed my thinking about the whole catastrophe. The author of our winter book says, if we are to restore the balance in our world, we need to go beneath the surface to heal the split between spirit and matter and help to bring the sacred back into life. The book helps us bridge that, excuse me, the book helps us build that bridge between spirit and matter with its central theme that the universe itself is alive, purposeful, and evolving, and that our own journey toward this new consciousness that we seek is only its most recent chapter. Our own time, in fact, is the first chapter of a completely new story. That's what Thomas Berry, one of the authors in our book, calls it. He says that we've outgrown the old story. God created world in 7 days or 7 eons, that God himself then retreated to stand away from his work, measuring man's level of belief as a marker of the planet's success, where our greedy minds have allowed us to plunder the living earth, treating her like a warehouse whose species are mere objects to be counted and used and sold. But the mainstream of world culture is still trapped in that old story. Llewellyn Vaughan Lee tells us in the preface of the book that in 2013, when it was first published, only the fringes of the reading public accepted its premises. He credits a title change in public interest happening 2 years later with Pope Paul's encyclical in 2015, entitled On Care for Our Common Home. There he calls us to see that the unprecedented destruction of ecosystems that we visited on the earth is rooted in urgent but unasked spiritual and moral questions that require from humanity a new spiritual and moral purpose. The Pope actually speaks of the earth as our sister, our Mother Earth, who now cries out to us because of the harm we've inflicted on her. In the book, he speaks about the violence and the abuse that have been poured onto this earth from what is basically an unconscious populace. We have forgotten something that we all knew in ancestral times. He goes on to speak to the blindness of our technologies and the painful economic models that show how the poor continue to bear the brunt of our forgetfulness and our arrogance. The Pope points out that our separation from the natural world may have given us the fruits of technology and science, but it has left us bereft of any instinctual connection with the spiritual dimension of life. Without a connection between our soul and the soul of the world, or the knowing that we are all part of one living being, our planet, it's the ancient wholeness of planetary order that's calling to us now and that needs our response. It needs us to return to our own root and rootedness, to our relationship to the sacred within creation. Einstein famously said, "You can't solve a problem with the kind of thinking that created it." We are charged with a tough task now. It's an evolutionary task to break our habits of the isolation created by the old ego mind and rediscover our unbroken connection with all that's around us through the heart's intelligence of feeling. Only then can we begin the work of healing, of bringing the world back into balance. It's not a problem to be solved. It's a recognition that the planet is a living being in distress. The wild weather, the loss of our coral reefs aren't just physical symptoms. Thich Nhat Hanh calls them bells of mindfulness, calling us to wake up and listen, pay attention, learn to again discern the sacred wherever we are, and respond directly to its living presence among us. Now, the voices collected in the book sound different notes of response to the Pope's encyclical. Each offers a different way of being attentive, of remembering what is sacred. Each chapter is a different way of describing a journey, the one that we're going to take together now, from our soulless, materialistic wasteland to a land rich in meaning and sacred purpose. A landscape that is also aware of the identity and place of every myriad inhabitant. That's an immense thing to imagine, that we ourselves are known, placed like a GPS within the living field that is our mother. That's a rather different psychological definition of ourselves, isn't it? From the one that we typically walk around with. On one side of the bridge between spirit and matter, we live separate lives, isolated within our individual, anxious selves. On the other side, we feel the patterns of relationship that support and nourish us, where we can commune together as a single living community. So we'll find ourselves reading this book not for knowledge only, but to absorb into our minds and hearts patterns of perception that cure our blind spots, and that will find us standing in a different landscape on March 22nd from the one we're occupying on January 18th. It will be because we follow the map laid out in the book. Now, we have a wonderful string of guides to help us follow that map. Next week, on January 25th, unless we hope that next week they'll be coming out of Ojai, you'll meet Wolf and Lisa Wapepa, Native Americans with ancestral roots in Ojai, who will share viewpoints from the original mindset of our continent's earliest inhabitants, whose traditions of understanding still speak tellingly to our world today. On February the 1st, we'll watch the Emmy-winning Best Documentary Film of 2011, Brian Swim's Journey of the Universe. Brian, a brilliant mathematics professor, was introduced to the work of Teilhard de Chardin by Thomas Berry and has been deeply influenced by their ideas. Swim is at the forefront of a new movement that integrates science and spirituality. This is his seventh and best film, and it stands as a kind of keynote for our series this winter. On February the 8th, Reverend Bart Tarman will guide us through Chapter 20, waking up to the whole spectrum of the living universe as the body of God. On February 15th, Rajalei Weininger will help us stretch into another level of selfhood, the ecological self, which includes other beings in the body of Earth as an extension of our own being, the greening of the self. On February 22nd, Alice MacDonald will unfold Llewellyn Vaughan Lee's thesis that we're facing not just an ecological crisis, but a spiritual crisis caused by our deep forgetfulness of the sacred nature of creation. This present crisis might become an opportunity for us to reclaim our sacred role as guardians of the planet. On March 1st, Dennis Rivers will explore the rediscovery of Gaia, the ancient Greek goddess who has become not just a contemporary archetype as the new name of our living, self-organizing planet, but as a patterned and sacred being that helps us discern the soul of the world with which our own souls are intimately related. On March 8th, Marianne Evans will jog our collective memory and reconnect us with our ancient understanding of the sacred presence of animals. The stories of her extraordinary work with equine therapy are real-time examples of the human and animal interconnection that mirrors our natural relationship to all of creation. On March 15th, Michael Kearney will explore the kind of living and thinking that does the work of spiritual consciousness to heal and reconnect our personal crises with a larger creation. On our final meeting, on March the 22nd, we'll welcome Word and Life's great friend, Father Jim Clark. Jim will guide us in retrieving our ancient religious beliefs in the living universe and find them fitting naturally into the new story. At the end of that 10th week, we hope that we will have come full circle to the place we need to be to start our own practice as catalysts to bond spirit and matter to heal our Mother Earth. This is going to be a very interesting 10 weeks. So, in the midst of all of our trauma and loss in our own community, we hope that the reading and lectures to come will ground us and frame our understanding and response to the cry of our own landscape. Judith.
Pat has introduced us to what is to come, and our morning is almost over, but we have one more song. And thank you so much. And next week, we hope that the people that live on the Indian reservation in Ojai will be able to be here. Otherwise, we'll switch. We'll be here next week.
I needed to announce that the day that I'm here, my presentation will be shared with the wonderful Teilhard scholar Ernie Tuminga, who will be covering the Teilhardian vision. So Ernie and I are going to divide that.
And this is Dennis Rivers.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain, the wind be tossed and blown.
With love and hope in our hearts. See you next week.
And the Purple Group is hosting next week.
Purple Group.